catches work in the Register Guard on the front page of the sports section online, registerguard.com. Become a Twitter follower. Use the handle at Austin Meek RG. Kindly flexible to join us in a different slot courtesy of Bimart. We welcome in Austin Meek. Austin, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. How are you doing?
All right. You know, because you come from another part of the country, a different market, I always ask you about environment. And you were at Moda last night, Game 4, Blazers-Clippers. That scene, it just seemed like, even on my TV, it was just loud. Were they just rocking from the opening tip or even earlier?
Yeah, that was a pretty intense crowd last night. You know, I thought it was a different crowd even from Game 3. I thought the Game 3 crowd was maybe in the back of their minds. They were thinking, okay, are we going to get swept in this series, you know? I think the Game 4 crowd was a little bit emboldened by that win in Game 3 and came in there with a little more attitude and a little more edge, like, okay, we're gonna take this one and we're going to even up this series and send it back to L.A. So, yeah, it's a great crowd, great environment. Playoff games, they're always really a spectacle because they, you know, they have those big screens that they bring down and the smoke machine and everything. It's a pretty neat experience.
Your piece today, you hit on the injury bug dominating the news in the NBA. And, of course, Portland, not via injury, but lost 80% of their starters from last year. Coming in, C.J. McCollum had three starts. Fair to get a little ahead of ourselves now as far as, you know, buying the events of the last 2 days mean, hey, if you're a Blazer fan, go nuts, think big.
Well, I mean, if you would have said before the season that we'd be talking about the Blazers having a path to the Western Conference Finals, that would have been crazy talk, right? Nobody
yeah.
would have even entertained that idea before the season. But look, it's there for them. I'm not saying they're going to get there, but I think you have to say with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin out, I think you have to say the Blazers are now the favorite to finish this series. I know they have to win a game on the road, and they didn't look good in the two games in L.A., but the Clippers are just such a different team without Chris Paul especially. I mean, he's really the guy that makes them go. And then, you know, if you go on to the next round and you face the Warriors without Steph Curry, I don't know, man. I think I'd still pick the Warriors in that series, but at least the Blazers have a shot. I'd give them no shot if Curry was healthy, but without Curry, I do give them a shot in that series.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. It's like, okay, take the best player in the world off the team. You can't just look at him the same. And, of course, Game 5's tomorrow. I want to get to what you wrote last Friday, and I do this a lot, but I got to claim ignorance. Well, I figured once a college player decides to go pro, the school's kind of out of the loop. I know they have pro days. The article focused on Jeff Hawkins, associate athletic director. How would you describe what he does for Oregon players who are NBA or NFL hopefuls as, I guess, a very blunt guide or liaison?
Well, first of all, ignorance is a great defense. I claim that often.
Nice.
But, yeah, the deal with Jeff Hawkins is, you know, what he does is pretty unique. You look at schools around the country, I don't think there's a lot of schools that are doing what Oregon is doing in terms of educating players and preparing them for the agent process, because it can be tricky. And, you know, I learned a lot of things about that process that I didn't know, that I was ignorant about. Some of the various pitfalls that are out there for players and what they have to look out for. And, you know, it really is an in-depth process that Jeff Hawkins has. And Jeff is a really interesting guy. I hope it came across in the article a little bit of his personality, because, you know, he can be kind of a bulldog. He's, he's not always Mr. Nice Guy, especially when he's dealing with some of these agents that might be trying to take advantage of players. But I think, you know, from the player's perspective, it's really nice to have an advocate like that who's looking out for them.
Yeah, you know, there's a fine line, like you mentioned, because he doesn't want to completely turn off everyone because they're going to go pro. They do need agents. They do need someone to kind of take the handoff at the next level. But he wants his guys properly taken care of. So I guess of those you spoke to, considering how long Jeff's been doing this, how would you describe his reputation?
Well, I you know, the agents that I talked to, and I talked to several, I think they respected what Jeff does. It's definitely not an easy process for an agent to go through, because there's interviews and, you know, they're sitting in front of a panel that includes Jeff and a couple other guys who are maybe asking some tough questions that the players wouldn't even think to ask. So it's not an easy process for the agents, but the ones I talk to, I think, have a respect for what they're doing. And, you know, if you are an agent who wants to do things the right way and follow the rules, then, you know, theoretically you would like to have somebody like Jeff who's enforcing an even playing field, so you know that you're not competing against a guy who's, you know, trying to pay his players under the table or something like that. You know, if you're an agent who's doing it right, then you would appreciate somebody who's making sure that it's clean.
We're talking with Austin Mika, the Register guard. Another interesting aspect, I guess, is lesser prospects. You talked about Mariota right now, Buckner. I mean, they're top 10 guys. The agents, the big names are courting them. What did Jeff have to say about those who, you know, might go late in the draft or get their shot at the pro level via free agency, about maybe some of the major dangers or traps they could fall into?
Well, those are the players who are probably most at risk of getting taken advantage of by a sketchy agent, because somebody like DeForest Buckner or Marcus Mariota, the agents competing for those guys are going to be the agents everybody's heard of who are at the top of the profession and, you know, very reputable, established agents. Whereas a guy who's maybe a fringe draft pick, the agents he's hearing from are maybe not as established and don't have as many clients, and you have to vet those guys a little more carefully. And, you know, Jeff told the story even last year of a guy who they really thought he could get drafted. I don't think he did end up getting drafted, but was right on that fringe. And if they hadn't intervened, he could have ended up signing with an agent who was going to expect him to repay like $20,000 or $30,000 on his training. So, you know, imagine that. Like, you think you're going to get drafted, and then you don't get drafted, and then your agent comes back and says, hey, you owe me $25,000 now to pay for this training you did in preparation for the draft. Like, that would be pretty crushing to be a guy in his shoes.
Yeah, I would find that troublesome. So you got to see an Oregon practice day, like a UFO sighting, or as rare as, you know, James Harden playing defense. But in particular, you saw the trio of quarterbacks who fill the depth chart. I remain convinced it's Prukop 1, Johnson 2, Wilson 3. So if you got to play talent evaluator, some ratings had him the second best prospect in the state of Oklahoma. What did you make of what you saw of Terry Wilson?
Well, I was impressed with what I saw of Terry Wilson. First time I'd been able to see him, obviously. I put on my fake mustache and my thick sunglasses, and I was able to get in there with the rest of the season ticket holders and actually watch practice. I think that's the first full Oregon football practice I've watched since I've been here, so it really was a milestone for me. But I thought the quarterbacks as a whole were kind of a mixed bag, and I put this on Twitter. I'm not sure that Oregon has somebody right now who's ready to be the man, you know, who's ready to just step on the field and take over the team. I think, and this kind of echoes what Mark Helfrich has been saying all spring, I think there's a lot of inconsistency with that position. And we saw that even just in one practice. And obviously you can't read too much into one practice, but it was hit and miss. And I still think Prukop's the favorite. I'd still bet on him heavily to be the starter in the fall. But I saw all three guys have their moments, and I also saw all three guys make some mistakes that confirm that nobody's really got the job locked down right now.
Obviously, Johnson's the red shirt, but because he was injured, it's not like he played at all. And again, no experience there. I mean, he was a really highly touted recruit. Rivals had him, I think, the third best dual threat quarterback in the country, you know, top 10 prospect in California. You mentioned little hit, little miss. I guess, what did you see from him that you liked?
Well, you know, both both Johnson and Wilson made some nice throws. I actually thought Wilson had a better day than Johnson did, and I think, you know, I think in a perfect world what would happen is Prukop would start, Johnson would be the backup, you redshirt Wilson, and then next year when Prukop's gone, Johnson and Wilson can compete for the job along with anybody else they bring in. And, you know, if you forced me to say right now, based on one practice, which is weird to, you know, project a guy's career based on one practice, but, you know, I like the upside with Terry Wilson almost more than Travis Johnson. You know, just it's hard to really quantify it, but, you know, the only two interceptions I saw yesterday were from Travis Johnson. One of them, you know, just a red zone throw. He had the guy open and just kind of lobbed the ball out there, and it got picked off. And that was kind of the, you know, that was kind of the rap on him coming out of high school. He was a, you know, dual threat quarterback, a good athlete, but not a very polished passer. So I think, you know, I think that could be competitive with those two guys behind Prukop, with Terry Wilson and Travis Johnson, to see who ends up getting the backup job.
All right, final thought, if we incorporate all of this, and obviously, like you said, you saw one practice, but do you feel, is it out of line to at least, with maybe a gut feeling, the circumstances at that position, the most important one, fair to say that you might be willing to bet it's a lot more stable than when we last left our heroes as the Alamo Bowl collapse was happening?
Well, if Oregon has to play more than one quarterback next year, they're going to be in a lot better position to do that than they were last year. That's for sure. Now, I don't know that the top end potential of the quarterback position is as high as it was last year with Vernon Adams. You know, I think Vernon Adams was just a really special player, and I think Dakota Prukop could be really good and still not be on the same level with Vernon Adams. So I'm not sure the ceiling is as high for the quarterback position next year, but I think the floor is also a lot higher. You know, if Dakota Prukop gets hurt, if they have to bring in a backup quarterback, I don't think it's a situation like the Alamo Bowl where the team just falls apart. You know, I think they could survive a quarterback injury better than they could last year when they really didn't have any depth behind Vernon Adams.
All right. Good take, as always. Check the Register Guard sports section, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Hey, Austin, appreciate your flexibility, as always, and enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.